Welcome to Aviation Careers Podcast. My name is Carl Valeri, and I'm your host today. And today I have with me someone who's inspiring future and current aviation professionals to pursue their dreams. David Rohe is author with a variety of experience as a bush pilot, mechanic, and airline pilot. You know, I think hearing his story will really inspire you to move forward in your aviation career. But before we get started, I know a lot of you come here to find out more about those free scholarships, guys. Well, we have a sponsor of this episode, the law offices of Robert M. Strumer, LLC, and they're giving away 100 scholarships guides. You can find them at www.strumerlaw.com. Get yours for free using that coupon code Strumer Law. You know, the law offices of Robert M. Strumer, LLC, handles of various aviation matters, including FAA safety investigations and pilot medical certifications. And again, you can find them on the web at www.strumerlaw.com. Well, again, today I have someone with me who is really inspirational and is somebody who has a wide variety of experience in aviation, and that's Dave Rohe. Dave, welcome to the show. It's wonderful having you here.
Thank you so much, Carl. Nice to be here.
And Dave, if I might ask, where are you today? I love the background there in the pictures.
I'm in West Palm Beach, Florida.
West Palm Beach. Sunny Florida. Mm-hmm. Terrific. So let's talk a little bit about your career before we get into all these different things that you've done. And it's been quite the ride, I think, over 50 years. That's correct?
Yes, it is. Yes. And still going, I might add. Even though I'm retired, I'm still going strong. Oh, yes.
Absolutely. Well, that's terrific. So tell us a little bit about this career choice that you made in aviation and how the bug bit you.
It was a bug. Very, very young, okay? I was born in Aruba in the Caribbean, and we lived just about 2 or 3 minutes away from the airport, the Juliana International Airport. And my mom used to take me there as a little kid, probably 2 or 3 years old. And for some reason, I loved the noise. I don't know what it was. After a while, when I was 5, 6 years old, I'm standing there at the end of the runway and holding on to the barbed wire, looking through the fence and getting speckled with hot sand. Anyway, I have a feeling somehow that set the tone, because before you knew it, I started asking my uncle about little paper airplanes. So that's how we started. He said, "Oh, you're doing it wrong." So he showed me how to do all that. And that was it. That was almost the beginning of it. So from the time I was 5, 6 years old, I just couldn't think about anything else other than airplanes. And having said that, my mother said to me, she was a florist, by the way, but very supportive of me in just about everything. She said, "You know something? When you were 8 years old, you said you wanted to fly an airplane and be a captain." I didn't even think I knew what that meant then, but I sure went on to it. So from the time I was 7, 8 years old, I was building and flying all kinds of model airplanes. I started with free flight, okay? They came in these little, you know, molded packages, I guess. Rubber powered, okay, a little Piper Pacer. I did every single thing, mate. I did gliders. I did control line flying, which a lot of young people don't even know about today.
But that's how I got started.
And I broke a lot of airplanes. And that's what got me into, I like building them too. So before you knew it, I joined the local air model club, and I did every type of flying, including radio control. That was kind of the ultimate side. By this time, I was in school now, in high school, and the principal said to me, "You know something, Rohe? I don't know that you really are into studious, you know, studying and academic knowledge." He said, "You look like a technical guy." And 3 afternoons a week, he sent me to the Government Technical Institute, where I did electrical and mechanical engineering. And while I was there, very quickly, we got into a program where these guys came from the National Airline looking for apprentices. And I only had one question. You're not going to believe this. The guy said to me, "What do you know about airplanes?" I said, "Oh, well, I know things fly, whatever." He said, "Do you know anything about a 4-stroke engine?" I went, "Hello." I gave him the whole deal in about 2 minutes. He said, "You're hired." That did it. I started in the seaplane base as an apprentice mechanic, and I really got into flying, you know?
Interesting. You said seaplane base now. Was that in Aruba? They had the seaplane base?
This is now in British Guiana.
To
learn to fly, learn Dutch, I should say. So he sent me and my sister to British Guiana. It was where he and my mom were from. For the Ruby, he worked for the oil company. So when we got to Guyana, British Guiana Airways had two bases. They had a seaplane base just outside of Georgetown, and then another base with DC-3s at the international airport. So I started as an apprentice at the seaplane base, and my love of seaplanes has never wavered. I love airplanes. Matter of fact, when I first went to Canada to get my commercial, we were on the Toronto Center Island, which is at an island where there's got a bunch of seaplanes as well. So before I finished my commercial, I was flying a float plane.
And wow.
Got me hooked, man. Went back to Guyana, got into bush flying, and probably one of these days, I guess, if you guys are ever interested, young people in particular, that's how I learned my wings, so to speak. I spent 2,500 hours flying a single-engine airplane over the bush, you know? All kinds of emergencies and stuff, because this is not good flying in that sense, but that's how I learned.
Yeah, I'm jealous. I've always wanted to see Kitcher Falls, and I'm sure you've seen it quite a few times.
It is an awesome view. It really is. Yep, beautiful.
And for those that don't know it, it's one of the tallest falls out there, and it's absolutely beautiful. And there's I would highly recommend people going to British Guiana to check out all the different things there. Lots of different cultures, and it's a wonderful place to see, not just by land but also by air, because that is truly a country that is connected through the airlines and using small planes to large planes, just like you did.
Yep. Mm.
So how did you go from bush flying to the next stage of flying? 2,500 hours of bush flying, that's a lot.
That's a lot. Well, what happened was I had a lot of friends who were flying in the airline. Okay, and they kept saying to me, man, give up the bush flying. That's dangerous stuff. And at that time, they had twin otters and DC-3s. So, and a caribou, actually, the Havilland caribou. And eventually what happened was I had almost an emergency. I was flying, a Cessna 206. I had a lot of my hours in a Cessna 206, one of the greatest airplanes I can ever fly in the bush, with a stall package, short takeoff and landing package. And one of my buddies said to me, you know something, guy, you got enough hours already. You're going to jump from being a new pilot into a first officer position. I went, now, really? And actually, that's what encouraged me. So I got into the airline from that point of view. And actually, my love was twin otters. Had a lot more flying now in twin otters. I did a lot of DC-3 and a little bit of caribou flying, but the twin otter was my love. Because again, it was a short, I love stall aircraft, you know what I'm saying? So that airplane could go anywhere.
So when you were building these hours, it seems like it's been a real serendipitous journey. Even though as a kid you said you wanted to be a captain, you don't remember that, and you've been driven in that direction. Do you think, especially in the job you had, being a mechanic helped you, especially flying in the bush?
Actually, it's not so much, Carl, flying in the bush. I want to tell you something. Being an engineer prepared me for an aviation career like none other. And it'll eventually come about when I got to corporate flying at the end of my career, where I wasn't selling an airplane. I was talking to people about the mechanics of an airplane and why one airplane would be better off than another in terms of hours, the types of checks you're doing, the longevity of the engines. Man, that set me up for life. And we can get into this in a minute, but my mentor was an engineer at Guyana Airways. He was the guy that set me. His name is George Loy. He's passed now, unfortunately. But George said, Guy, you're going to go far. I know you love flying, but he said, with an engineering background, you will know what's going on in that airplane you're flying. And he was correct. And now I'm trying to do the same thing. I'm telling people, these young people in particular, guys, it's a love of the career that is so exciting. It has so many possibilities. But to have an engineering background is unique. And it just doesn't become you to just learn to fly an airplane and know what's going on. You need to know the basics of why an airplane flies, you know, and how it flies.
You know, we talk about STEM a lot, and it's a big push to have people get more and more into science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And that is really important, because if you want to do more than say simply fly the plane, it you can go on to many more things, especially on an airline. But even, quote unquote, simply flying an airplane, having the depth of knowledge you would have, getting into those different type of engineering backgrounds, math and that type of thing, technologies, that actually helps you. And it really does help you out there flying the line, I think.
It does. In other words, you're not just sitting in the airplane now, and you probably realize by now, 90% of the new airplanes today are all technology-driven, glass cockpits, all latest technology. But you still need to know how to fly an airplane, basically, and if there's a problem, how you deal with it. And let's assume that all your electronics shut down. Can you fly the airplane? And you got to have that knowledge.
So you know, I so much agree with that. Sorry to cut you off, but it really, you know, I fly the first fly-by-wire airliner, and we still talk about what happens when the computer fails.
That's
constantly.
Right.
Absolutely.
I've got some stories. As a matter of fact, I was also connected with Air Canada because two-thirds of the way through my career, I actually failed my medical with Air Canada. If you notice, I got earphones. I got hearing aids. I had from noisy airplanes, DC-3s, with those humongous engines, just propellers 18 inches outside the cockpit, and lousy headphones. But I'll tell you something. The advent of making sure that you can know what's happening with an airplane when it's not, you know, just flying automatically, you know, you just don't put them on autopilot. You're really doing an awful lot when you learn the basics of what's going on. So Air Canada now said to me, you know something, I did some consulting work for them, by the way, and they said, we're taking a delivery for a new airplane in France from Airbus. Why don't you go over there and talk to these guys because they're having a party. While I was over there, I understood they were taking delivery. This is a neat story. There was an airplane and they were doing a delivery test. And I heard that night the guys were all getting stoned. They were celebrating a real delivery of an airplane that they thought they weren't going to live through. Seriously. What happened was, while they were circling, they were actually doing a little, not a departure, but an arrival procedure. And the airplane got hit by lightning. Okay, fly-by-wire, all the systems shut down. They shut down literally, and the airplane went into automatic hold. So now the engineers are telling the pilot, guys, here's what you got to do. Here's what you got to do. And the pilot kept saying, I am not shutting it down. The master switch was only it's just electrical, okay? He refused to do it for 25 minutes. And then he realized, you know something, we better do it. They had to Once they did that, they were able to reboot the computers. You know what it was? All three computers were in one part of the back of the airplane, and one bolt of lightning took it out.
Oh, my gosh.
Decided now to put them in two separate areas. That's where you learn stuff.
Absolutely.
I tell stories about that that the kids are going, really? I said, yeah, the advent of fly-by-wire, you have no idea how critical those issues are.
Absolutely. And putting different systems on different sides of the airplane, even in hydraulics, you know, a basic system. They put different, you know, reservoirs in different parts of the airplane, and the plumbing's in different parts.
Oh, boy. Yep.
Absolutely.
One of the things I really did when I got to de Havilland, I was actually running their ground school and flight school for a while. One of the things I really did that was interesting was I went on the assembly line to see them actually running these looms of wire throughout the airframe. That is so unique for young people to see. I did tours. Mm-hmm. I actually took a tour with kids down to Boeing's Seattle rent in Renton to look at the 747 assembly line. That blew me away. Never mind the kids, they were like, their jaws dropped. They're going, this is incredible. And if, you know what Boeing did? They don't show you the airplane from the ground. What they do is they take you underground and they take you up 7 floors in an elevator and open the doors at the rudder. And you're going,
oh, wow.
Oh, my gosh. And he looked down in this behemoth, you know. I'll tell you something. Airplanes, man, the love of my life.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, some people think it's strange. I guess you're similar to me as, you know, I'm at work and I fly airplanes. I come here and I work with airplanes and talk about airplanes. But the cool thing is when you find something, I think you'll agree with this, that you're passionate about, it almost doesn't feel like work, does it?
It never did. Even when I was an apprentice, it felt like a lot of fun learning new stuff. You know, it was really interesting. You're right. I've never thought I've had to do work hard, even though I failed my first DC-3 ride. Okay. That was a hard night for me. What happened was they put on the restricting, so you can't, and it couldn't reach the ground, the tailwheel lock. And the check pilot said to me, "Okay, Dave, here's what you do. Just stretch yourself forward. I'm going to ease your belt just a bit because you have to be able to unlock it from the time it locks up." I tell you, went home that night and went, "Oh my gosh, I nearly flubbed this." But that was the toughest time that I had without quite making my check ride on a DC-3. Wow. Interesting.
You know, that the DC-3 days till now, a lot of things have changed. One of the things that we talk about is, instead of, you know, when I started, we had to basically build the airplane and describe how an oxygen molecule makes its way through the aircraft. They don't really do that now, but there is some benefit to that, though, having that type of knowledge. So I'm wondering, I'm assuming you would recommend the possibility of going to college and getting a degree in aviation or in engineering.
Actually, I really would. I'd like the kids to start a little more formula in a formatted setup, instead of going straight into college at a high level and getting a technology degree. I think we need to get some more vocational training in here, okay? I don't know if, because I did that in China with 18 to 22 year olds, all right? And the Chinese were a little bit different because they're not that coordinated. They're not like North American kids, you know, where you got a lot of things you can manipulate with your hands and your feet. They don't do that in China. They only know to ride bicycles, okay? Now they're into motorbikes, but it's not the same thing. You need to learn the basics of how machinery works before you get to the technology and you understand, well, when a computer fails, what do you do? You can't rely on a computer to help you. You have to rely on your old brain stuff. And even though we talk about old seat of the pants flying, it'll get you there. I'll tell you, it'll get you there.
Absolutely. So, you know, we talk about that in training a lot.
That's it.
You know, you're a pilot, you know, and you have to make these decisions. And you can't rely on the plane and just the checklist. You have to rely on the gray matter up here.
You really do. You have to be able to think quickly. As a matter of fact, it's your best computer you're ever going to have. So it's in here, and you got to be able to translate it into physical action. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. So you were in the airlines, and so did you continue on with the airlines for the majority of your career?
The airline flying was just very monotonous. You know, you always tell a lot of people, it's hours of endless boredom interspersed by moments of stark terror. Well, I had mine, okay?
Right.
What happened was, due to the political situation back home, I brought my family back up to Canada, and that's where things went a bit sideways, because when I failed Air Canada, I went, wow, what do I do now? And that's when I got into flight training. And that was my next love. So it's not only flying now and learning to fly, but it's how to train people how to fly. And my love is still training. Matter of fact, I'm going to show you something that I really love. This, you're gonna love this. You know what this is?
Oh, cool.
This is a paper airplane with a motor.
That's cool.
It's a paper airplane with a motor. You fly it with your phone. It is awesome. It shows you what flying really is all about. I mean, I'm now going to be using that to mentor young kids as well. All right.
So the flight training that you got involved with, and obviously you've been training for most of your life, helping people out, whether at the airlines, et cetera. Do you focus more on the beginning pilots? Is that how that we are involved with primarily?
Yes. And I went back to Central Airways, which is at the Toronto Island Airport, and I started by training air cadets. They were like 16, 17 years old. I had 40 of them one summer. It was really, that was something else. One of them went solo at about, I don't know, 17 hours. The rest of them took like 50 hours. Because it's not, you know, it's not something that everybody automatically is attuned to. So, interesting stuff.
So it's interesting you said cadets, because that's something that's quote unquote fairly new in the past decade in the United States. And in other countries, they've been doing this for a while, taking people from a very young age and putting them through these gateway, you know, cadet programs. Kind of describe what it was like, you know, working in these cadet programs and the type of person that was accepted into those programs.
Well, first of all, if they're cadets, okay, they've had some kind of basic knowledge about mechanical things, not necessarily airplanes. They come from a background of scouting, or, you know, some basic skills, putting stuff together, even if it's Lego kits, you know, whatever. But they come with an imagination wow, this is an airplane. Can I fly an airplane? It might be a small little Cessna, but they're still interested in imagination, I guess is the word. I like kids because their minds are open. They're not fixed any yet, you know what I'm saying, by any one specific area in their future. They're like an open book. And boy, that's what I loved about training, is that you look at a kid, you look at his eyes, they're interested, they're smiling, they're open, and you can tell after just about 2 hours, is this kid going to make it or not? Because they want to learn more. They want to do more. And that's the key. You know, you can always give them a book and go, okay, here's the ground up, go back home and study it. But when you come to the airplane, you got to know what it's all about. All right?
Interesting you said that, because and all the time you've been talking, we're, you're not talking specifics about airplane. You're talking about all these other skills outside of just the airplane, which is phenomenal that you're mentioning it, because I always tell people it's not just the airplane. It's everything else that's surrounding it. You have to learn how to interact with people. You have to learn engineering skills. You have to learn all these other skills besides just flying the airplane. So I'm a big advocate of either getting a degree, obviously, and also getting involved in many other things. It's not just degrees. You can take courses on different things, that like mechanics, you know, how a jet engine works or something like that. That all adds to your education, and you may not get a certificate, but it helps.
That's true. By the way, you meant to, you know, when CRM came about, remember Corporate Resource Management, I glommed onto that one, because that's when you tell people about what else is going on, not just the airplane now. It's a people consideration, how you go coordinate with your flight crew. And then you got to be able to coordinate with your passengers as well. You have to know how to treat those folks who can't fly, who hate the thought of flying. You know how many times I had to leave the cockpit and go sit with somebody and go, okay, folks, it's not really okay. I'm the captain, but you notice I'm here sitting with you. So who's flying the airplane? That's what a co-pilot is, flying the airplane. We're perfectly capable of having one person in the cockpit. But, you know, I'm just trying to make sure that you understand this is the safest mode of transportation in the world. Doesn't matter what you do. You know, this is okay.
Absolutely.
You learn so many things other than just flying an airplane.
Flying an airplane, you know, in the flight training that you're doing, that actually at times can be a challenge to, you know, pay the bills. Do you find that's been difficult, or have you gotten involved in other things besides just simply flight training?
Well, it's interesting you say that. I've done a myriad amount of stuff, and I'm still doing some consulting work. So even though the financial aspect of learning flying is a very good career, in some areas, especially now with commuter flying, there's that middle ground, and we're going through that cycle again where we're short of pilots. So the airlines now have to make a lot of adjustments, all right? So I'm not sure financially how the young people are making out today, all right? Because flying is an expensive learning process now. Not just getting a degree now, but you got to learn. You go to Embry-Riddle. Boy, that's a ton of bucks you're looking at here.
Right.
Yeah, the scholarships you mentioned just now, I'd love to get involved with sharing kids how a scholarship can help them. And if this company is doing that well for kids, look at that. It's a real
opportunity. Absolutely. Yeah, that's something that's always been difficult. But the good thing, though, things have changed, that even instructors are making more money.
That's true.
You know, even, you know, when I started out, that, and you started out, but still, it's usually the gateway to the next step. There are instructors, full disclosure, airline instructors that make really good money. But for the most part, it's usually a stepping stone. And it's great that someone like yourself has stayed within the instructional realms. But you've also gotten involved in other things. I think you had mentioned you did some sales, I think, at some point.
Well, but that's at the end. That's after I got out of flying. But you're right. I came about it in a different aspect, I guess, all right? But I did the airline flying first. And then because I had to get out of it because of my hearing, that's when I had to do the other stuff. And you're right. The flight training was not the greatest in those days. But you're right. Those are all moving up now. Guys at Flight Safety make a good living today in training.
Absolutely.
As a matter of fact, one of my closest friends worked at Flight Safety for like 9 years. Did really, really well.
Yeah.
It's an interesting scenario to get into. So all realms of aviation, wherever you start is not the point. It's your journey. And I'm still on my journey. All right? I love it.
And you've been doing it for more than 50 years. So I'm glad you're enjoying the journey. And you redefined yourself. And I think that's important with most pilots is that they redefine themselves. Even people, you know, you talked about airline pilots. I mean, you're right. Sometimes it gets kind of boring, but a lot of these folks have other things that they do, and they give back by helping younger people get involved, or they give back by doing something in STEM.
Well, you having said that, I've developed a nonprofit organization to help young pilots, all right? So that's where I am. I've got the Junior Aviation Club in Guyana, and I'm actually now going to be promoting young people again. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to be talking to people in North America about scholarships, because Guyana is going through an evolution because of oil, the oil process now that's so good for it. But they need a whole aviation industry now, okay?
Right.
So we'll be doing some work for that. I love doing stuff for young people.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, having many friends in Guyana, I in our scholarships guide, for those that are listening that are in South America, Guyana, we're going to start putting more of those in the scholarships guide. We've been adding more and more besides, you know, obviously we're U.S. Based primarily, but I think it's important for everybody. And it's a worldwide shortage right now of pilots. It's going to continue. Like you said, it's in another cycle.
Probably about 15 years. Yes, that's right.
Yes, absolutely. So this nonprofit that you're doing, you've already got this up and going and off the ground, right?
Yes, I've got a 501c3 now. I've got that all done. It's registered again as an NGO as well. So we're just poised to get going on this, yes.
And where can they find that on the internet or something like that if someone wants to help?
They can find the process, which is called a global academic network. But that's not the club. The club stuff I'm still putting together right now. I've got a logo done. As a matter of fact, we can work on this in the next couple of months if you're interested, because I'm definitely going to get this thing going. I've got a nice little process going, a couple of founders to do this. I'm actually looking for a local aviator in Guyana now to be our flight training instructor with the school, okay? Because that's what I need. I'll do the stuff online. I've got all the slides. I've got all the knowledge about what's needed. Just to give you an example, I've got slides that says, how do you run an airport? All right? So, you know, there's so many different jobs and careers required at an airport, you know? And I've been in corporate aviation, as you probably remember. I've been selling. That's when I got into sales and marketing. And I'll tell you something. My first boss said to me at Innotech, he said, Dave, you know something? You really got a good pitch here. You don't need to go try and sell a guy about how good the airplane is. Go and tell him how it compares against the next airplane. That did it for me. I used to go and talk to the chief engineer first. I don't even go to talk to the chief pilot. Talk to the chief engineer. Get your guys together. I'm going to tell them how good this airplane is. That's what they're opening the inspection panels and showing them what's going on. Oh, it makes a big difference. Yeah. Actually close deals without even trying to.
That's awesome. You know, that's and again, it's all aviation related. And that's why I think a lot of people realize that, you know, having that background in flying is great, but there's so many other things. Like you talked about air parks. I mean, there's so many other jobs out there.
Wow. So there's hundreds, literally everything to do with aviation. It's a complete industry that's worldwide, has so many different facets to it.
Absolutely, no. Absolutely.
I've written my two books on that.
So tell us a little bit about that. You went from that. Now you do a little bit of you know, journalism, and you also started doing some writing. And
I've written two books. When I was in China, unfortunately, even though I went over there to help the Chinese prior to the Olympics, I got kidnapped. So unfortunately, that was one of the negative things that happened. But that allowed me to write my first book. But my second book, which is called Bush Flying, all right, that's when they're both on available on Amazon, either as an ebook or paperback. But they're about my aviation experiences, I guess. The bush flying is tremendous because that was specifically about single engine flying. That didn't involve a lot of airline stuff. My third book is going to be called Death of an Airline, and it's got nothing to do with a crash. It's got something to do with an airline going on to demise because they didn't do the right stuff.
So that bush flying is available now, though.
Yes,
and
it
that's
is.
On Amazon. Yes, we'll have some links. Actually, we'll have a link to your author's website. And you talked about the kidnapped. I'm assuming that other book you did, if someone's interested in hearing about it, that would describe what happened there.
Yep.
Yeah, so we'll definitely have a link to that. And it's actually really easy. It's Dave Ruhe, the author, DaveRuheAuthor.com. Again, the link will be in the show notes if we'll spell it out on the screen. So, but that is going to be neat hearing about the death of the airliner. I'd like to hear more about that in the future.
Well, let me put it quite frankly, do not take a pilot out of an airplane and make him a CEO. That was me. I'm sorry, that was me. I decided I want to run my own airline. So I started a little cargo airline out of Miami running into the Caribbean. Big mistake. I was too invested in the wrong aspects of it.
Right.
And one of the things I didn't know, it wasn't a crash, but I also will tell you that Guyana Airways folded because of a lack of management expertise.
Right.
That was political. Mine was financial and business management types. I was actually working for Red Lobster, if you know the restaurant chain. I was bringing fresh seafood from Grenada and St. Lucia into Fort Lauderdale, okay, every week. And what happened is I was flying DC-6s, lost an engine in the worst kind of weather south of Puerto Rico. And I finally, the old captain said to me, I can't make it. The weather's too bad. We're going to have to put down Puerto Rico and chain the pot. We stopped there. And we were on the ground for like 9 hours. Boy, by the time we got to Fort Lauderdale in the cargo department, as soon as we landed, the agent came out, he was about halfway to the airplane, and he went and turned around and walked away. Mate, I had to actually pay to dump 33,000 pounds of seafood. And when I called the insurance company, they said to me, you obviously didn't read the back page, okay, the fine print. Perishables are not insurable on an airplane. They go, oh my God.
Yeah.
So anyway, I lost 9 engines in 3 years, okay? And I couldn't withstand all of that. So wrong airplane for the wrong time. DC-6s were the perfect airplane, but not for short routes, okay? They love 9 and 10 hour stuff, but when you get to 2 hours, the cylinder head temperatures just peak, and then next thing you know, you lose an engine.
Wow.
So you don't take a guy out from an airplane and make him a CEO.
Mm-mm. No. Get him through some training first, right? As they say.
Yeah. I needed to go back to business management school first.
Right. Absolutely. But at least you know how to operate the aircraft, that's for sure. And interesting little fact as an aside, I'm actually in the home of Red Lobster here. It was actually in Lakeland, Florida, is where the founder of Red Lobster is.
That's right.
And amazingly enough, the first one was right here. It's not the original one's not here, but obviously we do have one in Lakeland, Florida. Nice. Just a little side note for those trivia folks out there. But you know, Dave, this has been great, you know, learning all about the different aspects of flying and also your background. But just so that we can kind of wrap up here, hopefully we haven't missed anything. But this has actually been really good, Dave. I really want to, you know, talk more about this and find out more. So the best way to find out more is you got two websites, actually. Aviation Hotshot is one of them that you have. And on that website, they can see, what can they find there?
A wide range of stuff, okay? On my background as well, there are some stories in there as well, which you'd be interested in. So on the blog, there's some stories in there. I'm researching now different options for automatic for drone operators, because Guyana is going through a different upheaval now in terms of technology. So I'm not only talking to young people now about pilots for you know, airplanes, but also for drones, because that is the future as well. So we need to move into that area. And for middle-aged guys again, or gals, and by the way, I'd like to be able to promote more females into this business. That's our real hang-up for us going way back. We need more females in this industry.
Absolutely.
Because I got to tell you the truth. When I was doing flight training, the young women that I trained were so much more detail-oriented than some of the guys, all right? They were, I don't know what it was about them, man. They just infused themselves with detail, and they knew exactly was going on. So
awesome.
I'm saying that the drone could be now a good possibility, or that type of technology, for the 30s and the 40s and even 50s, because those people are also technology related. And right now I'm doing some research on underwater drones to check for oil leaks in the ocean.
Because that's cool.
It's going through all the exploration now. So there's a lot of opportunity. You brought up something else that I wasn't looking at them for ab initio training, so to speak, but something in the aviation industry. There's such a wide range of possibilities today. And
absolutely. And tomorrow.
Many years to come, because now we're talking, we eventually get into space at some point as well. So
All kinds
of stuff. You fly an airplane, you could fly a space capsule, you know.
Yes, and that's where the STEM comes in, the engineering,
STEM,
the math, et cetera.
I love the STEM project. Oh, man, that is so good with this. All right.
So, Dave, you know, one of the things I do want people to do is check out your website, your author's website, Dave.
Yep.
RuhiAuthor.com, because those books are really cool, and I really I haven't finished reading them, but really highly recommend them. Hopefully when I get done, I'll have a review at the end. But you can find that on Amazon, but of course in the show notes here. If anybody has questions, by the way, for Dave, feedback at aviationcareerspodcast.com, we will forward them on. Or, of course, you can ask on the website there.
Yes.
But, Dave, I really appreciate your coming here today, and I think this has been terrific. I know having somebody who's passionate about aviation and has been through all the different aspects of aviation, it's nice to see that and see kind of the changes over the years.
I live the change, and I tell you something, yes. It is marvelous to be able to see all those different opportunities that come from those old airplanes that I got up there. By the way, there's also an Embraer, which the Astrojet. I sold Astrojet. I call it Ferrari of corporate airplanes. We were doing Mach 1 in level flight, okay, over Vietnam a couple of years back. Awesome stuff, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks very much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Yes. Dave, I really appreciate you coming here. And if you're listening right now, like I said, check out all the links in the show notes to all Dave's websites and also the books that he has out there. But most importantly, you know, as you heard Dave talk about, make sure that you do something today to move forward in your career and your life. It could be something small, it could be something large, like signing up for that ab initio training or the cadet program, or getting a book and watching a video. But do something every day to move forward in your career and in your life. We'll talk to you next episode. Same flying out there.